Hello and welcome to A Hurler's Life with me, Brian Carroll. In this podcast, we chat with former greats of the game about their hurling lives. From the best manager they played under, to the one win that means the most to them. In every show, the guests will reveal the best six they ever hurled with. Na Pearshig and Limerick sharpshooter Shane Dowling joins me in this week's show. Limerick's all-time top scorer in championship, with 13 goals and 176 points in 32 championship appearances. Shane won one National Hurling League, two Munster, and that elusive All-Ireland in 2018. Injury might have robbed him of more years in the field, but he has left a serious legacy in such a short career. This is A Hurler's Life with Shane Dowling. A Hurler's Life is proudly sponsored by Golan Bake. Golan Bake is the home of the jambon, and you can buy their products in the supermarket for Israel to bake at home. Their range includes the nation's favourite, the ham and cheese jambon, as well as their new pepperoni pizza jambon and chicken fajita jambon flavours. Hurling and jambons, only in Ireland. Shane, you're very welcome to the show. It's massive to have you on the show. I didn't think I'd be interviewing you, being honest. 27 years of age, and unfortunately, you've had to retire from an intercounty career. You know, has the dust settled a bit on a little bit, and how are you starting to cope with it now?
Yeah, thanks, Brian. Listen, the dust has settled, and being honest, the dust settles 2 or 3 days after the announcement, I suppose. But yeah, how am I finding it? Listen, it's tough. Obviously, the club scene is in full swing. I know, obviously, Limerick or the intercounty still isn't there, and even if it does come back this year, you know, I don't think I'll miss it as much as I probably will next year when it comes around, when everything is back to normal. But you know, it's I have to live with it now, and you know, I have great people around me, and I'm trying my best. It's not easy. I'm not going to say it is. It's definitely not easy. You know, coming down to the pierce, you're watching lads train, and you're not able to do that. I suppose essentially everyone's intercounty career will come to finish at some stage, albeit mine came earlier than I thought. But yeah, not being able to take part when the piercing is frustrating and disappointing and upsetting, whatever way you want to word it, you know.
Obviously, you've had knee trouble, and is there any sign of that abating over the next, you know, few months or maybe into next season? Is there any hope that you'll be able to go back to club hurling next year?
Yeah, like, the honest answer is I don't know. I'm still looking at different things and trying to get it right. You know, it's still not right from a life point of view. And that's most important for me now. I know I've said that quite a bit, but it's quite frustrating when you still can't go for a game of golf with your friends, or sometimes when you can't walk from one end of the town to the other. But that'll take time, but it will come right. Hopefully sooner rather than later. And once I get that back right first, then the plan is to try to get back when it appears, whether that allows me to play outfield or just try the goals, I don't know, but that's definitely the plan at the minute anyway.
And then over the last couple of seasons, obviously, you've been hampered with that injury. It's been a different role for you. You've been a substitute for most of the last couple of years.
Yeah, I have. I'll be honest, you know, if I'm not saying, I don't know what I put that solely down to the knee injury. You know, I came back in 2018 and we had a very, very long club campaign. We obviously played Coola in the All-Ireland final, club final, which went to a replay. So we didn't get back into the Limerick setup until the start of April or even beyond that. And they had already been back training since November or December. And, you know, the lads had a lot of work done and had a lot of game time played. And when we came back in, I suppose we'd no divine right to jump straight back into the team. And that's just the way the year went. I suppose as it turned out, with everything that happened, you know, it worked out very well, and that led into the next season as well. But, you know, I wouldn't be putting that solely down to my knee injuries.
How did you cope with that mentally, considering that you were more or less a starter for most of your career?
Yeah, it was tough. Like, when you go back, we played Tipperary in the first round and I didn't see any game time. And the same thing happened when we played Cork in the following game. And, you know, it's as gas how the year can go. Like, I don't know what I've seen any game time the following day against Wexford, or sorry, against Waterford, only for Angelan got sent off. And, you know, I did a solid game that day, and then we played Clare, and the team, you know, didn't do well. And, you know, I was the one that suffered in against Carlo, and I didn't get any game time there. And after that game, it was very, very difficult. You know, all you want to do is play hurling. And I knew, like, I didn't know we were going to win the All-Ireland, but I knew we had as good a chance as any team had ever been a part of. And from the Kilkenny game onwards, sure, it was incredible stuff, and you know, but I was really, I just wanted to be part of something that was going to be special, and I was glad that I was. You know, of course you'd like to start, but yeah, it was different. But then when things happen, like the Cork game, you often wonder, like, do things happen for a reason, and maybe they did that year.
You know, you just said yourself that you suffered, you know, the team got beaten by Clare down in Ennis comprehensively, and then you suffered and you weren't starting against Carlow. You must have been a little bit bitter about that, were you?
Yeah, but I suppose we had, I can't remember fully, but I know we had a couple of injuries, or we had lads come back from injuries, and they gave lads game time that day where they used it as an opportunity to give them game time that hadn't got previous game time for different reasons. So in the broader picture, I suppose, looking back in it, I could definitely see what they were doing. They wanted to give lads game time. Of course, for me, it was disappointing. And then I thought, you know, when you're in the middle of it, you think, gee, that's my year over now, like, you know, and Kilkenny coming up. But then the following, I think 2 days later, Paul Kinnock rang me. And then the weekend, John Kiely came down and put his hand around my shoulder. And you know, obviously, I got 15 or 20 minutes against Kilkenny and did well. And I came on and it just took off from there.
You ended up being an absolute super sub. Like your performances against Cork, obviously in the Ireland semi-final, and in the final, then, you know, a couple of big goals. You know, that obviously showed that you had to have the right mindset, and that probably alludes itself to what you're talking about there with John Kiely putting his arm around you and making sure that you were on board.
Absolutely, yeah. And like, some days they work and some days they don't. Like that day against Cork was a freak day, being honest. Like anything I came across or came near just fell for me. And like it was incredible the way it worked out. But then you go on to the All-Ireland final, and I think I saw probably, I don't know, it was a 27 or 8 minutes, and I touched the ball twice. You know, albeit one of them was an important touch. But it just goes to show that some days you can come on and the game can just drift from you, because 28 minutes in the greater scheme of things is very, very little time to try and make an impact. But some days it works and some days it don't. And that year for me, it worked more than it didn't, thankfully.
In the penalty you took against Cork in that All-Ireland semi-final, you roofed it, top corner stuff. What was going through your head before hitting that?
Yeah, and if I saw someone doing that now, I'd probably give out to them, because I hit it way too high. I hit it way too close to way too close to hit to the post, to the crossbar, and to hitting it wide. I don't know why I done that. I probably meant it a small bit lower, because you know, I brought too many risks into it. But it just goes to show, Brian, in the game of hurling or in any sport, a couple of inches make a massive difference. If that hit the crossbar or that hit the post or that went wide, first of all, who knows which way the result would have went? And second of all, people would all be saying, Janie, why didn't you keep it low? Everyone knows that you hit the ball low into the corner, so the goalie didn't have much of a chance. But again, everything just worked out that day and that year, I suppose, for the team. Yeah, of course, you were nervous going up to hit it, but you don't have too much time to think, really. It just happens very quickly. Facing Anthony Nash, who I suppose I would consider one of the best goalies in Ireland, definitely made it harder. But yeah, that was a sweet moment, and feeling that I'd love to experience again sometime in the future.
Obviously, the penalty rule has changed, and you can't cross the 21 when you're hitting it. It's a whole new dynamic, and you're only facing one. But you spoke about Anthony Nash in the goal. You went across what you would consider his weak side, you know, being right-handed, up to his right-hand side.
Yeah,
and that obviously. That was your thought process before, was it?
Yeah, and again, without getting in too much to the psychology aspect of it, I suppose I tried to read his mind for him to say, right, Shane probably thinks that I know he's going to go to my weaker side, so he's going to reverse that and go to my strong side. I have no clue. I've never spoke to him since. But that's the way I thought about it, that maybe he overthinked it a bit, in the fact that I suppose everyone would have thought that he would have thought that going to the weaker side would be the obvious thing. So then he actually flipped that and said, you know what, he might try and go the other side. But as a goalkeeper, I think you have to guess, because if you don't guess and stand in the middle and it goes somewhat to the corners, you're probably not going to save it. And I suppose, listen, he went one way and I went the other. And as I said, the rest is history.
The All-Ireland final, you're 8 points up going into injury time and you think you're home and hosed. You know, after scoring a couple of goals on the bounce, Croke Park is absolutely rocking, but somehow Galway start making this massive comeback. That must have been frantic stuff.
Yeah, and I think the turning point for me, or what I believe is the turning point, is when the fourth official put up 8 minutes. I think when the fourth official put up 8 minutes, the Galway crowd just got a small bit behind them. The Galway lads knew there was a good bit of time left. it's strange to see 8 minutes in an All-Ireland final in addition time, and then they got a goal and they got another goal, and all of a sudden you're on the back foot. And obviously but in saying that, we should have got a blatant free. Peter Casey was blatantly fouled, and we should have got a free, which would have steadied the tide, and probably we would have won it somewhat easier in the end. We didn't get that free, and you know, it was fairly scary coming into the last couple of minutes, because if something happened with that last ball, if that dropped into the net or something, I think it could have been a long, long time before the people of Limerick got over that, especially considering that the history is ye well know about down there. So yeah, no, that was a frantic 8 minutes, but you know, I think it was our time. I think, you know, we suffered enough, and I think we probably the best team in the championship. We were the best team in the championship that year, and got a due reward.
What were you thinking when Joe Canning was standing over the free? Did you think he'd do it?
I just wanted it to go over or to go wide. What I didn't want is what happened, because I was too afraid that, you know, it could bobble into the net. But he was a long way out after a hard game. It would have taken something for him to reach it. I didn't know. I just didn't want it to drop into the net. That's what I was really praying for.
You've had some exceptional wins in your career to date. You know, obviously you've talked about that All Ireland final with Limerick in 2018, but you also won the Club All-Ireland with the Pearshig. But what would you consider as the one win in your All-Ireland career that means the most to you?
Yeah, listen, I think it's very hard to pick one. Like, I remember back in 2009, you know, in the Pearshig went got to their first county final. They were beating 117-3. Like, that's not that long ago. And I remember there was a stalwart in the Pearshig, Paddy Verdon, God rest him. And I remember him saying to me down at the summer camps the following year that all he ever wanted to see before he passed away was in the Pearshig between one county title. You know, so it's not that long ago where we didn't, I suppose, win anything really. So when you go on, like, obviously your first county, like that one in 2011, the Munster in 2013 for Limerick was huge, but I think there's no getting away from the two All-Irelands, obviously, with Limerick, which was, I suppose, you know, that was humongous for Limerick, and it was so out there across the country. But the club also was phenomenal in 2016. As I said, the 7 years previous to that, we were beaten by 17 points in the county final, and we came a long way, and to be able to win without your club, very, very few people get to experience it. And, you know, I consider myself very lucky to be able to have experienced that.
You won 5 Limerick titles with your club, but amazingly, you went on to win the Munster title 4 times after that. So you just had a knack of being able to turn it on in Munster as well.
Yeah, and I think Sean Stack came in 2009, and Gray Clare, man, still a great friend of mine. And I know just his attitude. So he was there in 2011 when we won our first one. Sorry, he came in 2011, the year we won it first. And... 2009. He came in 2009, beat 2009, 2010, and we won 2011. And he always said that if we ever got out of Limerick, that we'd always rattle Munster, that the pressure would be off, that the team we have was built for winter conditions. And when we won the first one, then the second one rolled on, and then I suppose you realise you were unbeaten, so you wanted to keep that going for as long as possible. But again, it comes back to, we were 8 or 9 points down against Six Mile Bridge in 2015. Probably shouldn't have won that game, but dug it out. And there was many games that we shouldn't have won, but just dug it out. And yeah, to win 4 Munsters and 5 counties was really special.
The All-Ireland defeat to Coolah ranks up there as one of the best All-Ireland series probably ever seen in club hurling. You were the two heavyweights at the time. You know, you'd won the All-Ireland 2015, Coolah had won it in 16. So it was a massive game to have between the two. They just somehow drew the game in Croke Park, you know. And then you nearly done it in Portlaoise as well. That was a serious couple of games.
Yeah, I would say they got a draw in Croke Park, but truth about it is they shouldn't have had, because I got a free 40 yards out in front of the goal with 60 minutes in the clock, 3 points up. And if I put that over the bar, we were 4 points up, and there was no way they were going to come back to that. So if anyone's asked me my greatest regrets in my life, the biggest regret I've ever had is not putting that ball over the bar. And we would have won that All-Ireland club. We would have won 2 in a row. And the second day, we were doing very well. Michael Casey was very sick going into the game. Had done a serious job on Conor Callan the previous day. And had come off at half-time the second day. So, as I say, what's meant to be is meant to be. But sometimes what's not meant to be is not meant to be. And for whatever reason, that second All-Ireland for us wasn't meant to be. Because just anything that could have went wrong went wrong, and I definitely blame myself for not winning the second one.
What happened over the free? Did you just complacency, or did you just miss hit it, or what happened?
No, it wasn't complacency. I'll never forget it. I just, lack of experience in Croke Park would be one. I hit it very well, but it just drifted off to the left. I couldn't understand why, but his gas in it just drifted off left, and I don't know why, to be honest. But when we in against Cork in 2018, that was my next time back there, and when I came onto the field, but after a minute, I got a free 70 yards out or 60 yards out underneath the Hogan stand, and I said, whatever happens here, this ball is not drifting left to the post. And I whatever way the goals fall, I just found it. And I suppose, so what was Napiershig's downfall in 2016 or 17, whenever it was, what was Limerick's gain in 2018, because I'd sussed the goals out at that stage, and I was able to guide that one over the bar.
You're obviously a brilliant free taker. Did you practice them a lot, or what was your routine?
Yeah, no, I spoke about that before, got plenty of abuse for it too, but it was the way I did it. I would have practiced a lot as a young kid, spent hours and hours and hours in the Piercer growing up to get my technique right, and to make sure that I had everything right, so that whether I was playing a challenge match or in the highest pressure match, my technique never changed. As I grew older, I spent a lot of time visualization, and because I always felt that once you had your technique right and your striking right, that it was going down to the pier, hitting freeze on your own with nobody there, compared to going to Croke Park and All Ireland final day. I found that too useful, so that's why I use visualization a lot. Once I had my technique and my striking right, I was happy, and I just thought about what I was going to do and where I was going to put it and all that. And that's what worked for me. Everyone is different. I know people will say that Tiger Woods will go to the driving range every single day to practice. But it was visualization for me that done it.
So you would only basically just practice and train, and maybe the last training session before a match, something along those lines, would it be?
Yeah. Just ensure that, you know, my technique, I had to practice so much as a kid that I could do it with my eyes closed. I mean, you could go back through any of my frees over the last 10 years, and I can guarantee you that my technique had never changed. And so that stood to me from practice as a kid. But then as I grew older, I just wanted to visualize doing it, because there were a lot of more high pressure situations. If there was any advice I could give to anybody, is if you're going practicing freeze, you hit maybe 30 balls and leave it at that, because what happens after that is you get tired, and then you start missing them, and then you start questioning yourself. So even when I was going practicing, I would have brought down maybe 5 or 6 balls, repeated it 6 times from different areas, and left it at that. And so that's one bit of advice I could give. Advice I would give is that if you are going practicing, don't hit any more than 30 or 40 frees.
You've had a couple of serious managers down through your career. Obviously, you've said John Kiely was over you in Limerick, and you had TJ Ryan before that, you had John Allen, Donal O'Grady. Even you had Shane O'Neill, the current Galway manager, with Napiershig. So if I was to push you, who would you say was the best manager you've ever played under?
Well, a manager is only as good as the backroom team that he has. If you could be a really good manager, but if you have a weak backroom team, you become under pressure straight away. It's one thing I learned myself, even going forward. I don't know where I'll ever end up, or if I'll ever end up anywhere. But the one thing I'd like to think is that I'd have a good management team with me, because there's so much involved these days. You need to have strong people with you. That's where John Kiely would have had he would have had the best management team that I've ever worked under. In terms of Sean O'Donnell, the stats, Paul Kinnurka's coach, and all the selectors that were there with him, Caroline Currid is a head doctor, as I call her, a sports psychologist. So he had a serious team. Shane O'Neill, obviously current Galway manager, a great friend of mine, serious manager, would have huge respect for him. And I think what defines a good manager for me is knowing the difference between giving a fella a kick up the hole or putting your hand around the shoulder. And I suppose, if I'm being honest, I was the type of lad that I always liked a conversation with a manager, a chat, even no matter what it was about, whether he was telling me good or bad news or vice versa. I always liked a mature conversation. And that's what worked for me. If a fella came in and started rolling the ball and then kicking me up the backside, I wouldn't really respond to that.
You mentioned Caroline Currid. She's been involved in some hugely successful teams. You know, what was her role really? Was it big from a player's perspective?
Yeah, huge. She was a mammy-like figure, as we call her down here. She had a great track record, number one, but I'll never forget, I wouldn't be a huge... I won't say a huge believer in sports psychology. I didn't really buy it as a kid. And I remember, I'll never forget the first day we met her. Her last comment was, whether you like us or whether you don't, the one thing I'll ask is just to have an open mind. And the minute she said that, I said, you know what, she's right, have an open mind. But what she was great is that like, she didn't come in with all these big sports psych quotes and having you do all this mad stuff. Again, she was just there for a chat. If things were going wrong in your life or if you were having problems off the field, she would ensure that you were having, that, you know, she'd try to help you out on that end, so that by the time you did take to the field, that there was nothing off the field bothering you. And I think that's very important. Happy player off the pitch, better player on the pitch.
Very good. Okay. In terms of your career pathway then, you know, how do you think hurling actually influenced it?
One thing I definitely want to say is that I don't believe hurling got me any jobs. I never would have liked to have gotten a job just because of that I played hurling for Limerick or anything like that. I've only had two serious jobs in my life. One was, I was working in a pharmacy for 8 years, and my employer, Richard O'Flaherty, is the current chairman in the Pearshig, and I got to know him through in the Pearshig. So I suppose my job did come from, you know, making contacts within the GEA. And the role that I'm in now, operations manager in the centres in Limerick City, James Ryan is the owner, tip man for his troubles, but he's the board and org chairman in the Pearshig, and I got to know him through in the Pearshig as well. So, you know, the more people that you're involved with, the more people you get to know. But I'd hate to think that I got a job just because I played hurling or just because I played Limerick. I'd like to think that I got a job on the back of my personality.
Obviously, intercounty hurling has huge demands on players at the moment. You know, how did your job fit into that scheme and how did it work?
Yeah, it's just about having employers that are understanding. If you don't have employers that are understanding, well, then you won't survive or they won't survive. They need to realize and appreciate what you do. And it's tough for some employers, depending on the job that you have. I've been very fortunate down through my career that everyone has understood the demands that are required. And I think the majority of people, majority employers that are out there now understand that as well. Again, I don't think too many people go into roles where they think they might be under pressure. Work-wise, obviously some people are, but especially where the age profile has gone now, it's younger and younger. So the majority of people are probably in college or starting out in their careers. And but it's, you know, when they do start off in their careers, I think the employer will know that, you know, there may be different days or evenings that players will have to get off work early or whatever to meet the demands that are required now to play intercounty hurling, you know.
So when you had training weekends or big matches, time off was no problem?
Not for me. I've been very fortunate, and I made that known as well when I was retiring, that I wanted to make sure that I said it, that I always appreciated that everything that was done for me.
Now that you're out the other side of the intercounty bubble, would you think it is? Is that a correct term? Is it a bubble?
It probably is. Yeah, you can't. Listen, it is. But if one thing I would say about John Kiely is that when he came in 2017, myself and Keane Lynch were great buddies. We think the same. And for a couple of years, we thought it got very serious and it wasn't enjoyable. Like that, if you were having a bit of crack in the dressing room, you know, an hour before the game, people would be looking at you saying, "Defla's not tuned in." But in fairness, you know, and that's where John is brilliant, is that was changed. So the fun element was brought back. He was very, very good at giving lads time off if needed. That's where all the fitness, the strength and conditioning coaches know, with all the technology that they have, they can see if players have been overloaded, that they do give players time off even when they don't want it. So I think it's changing. I think it is easier than it was before. But at the same time, you know, everything that you do every day, you're thinking about intercounty. So even the days you're not training, it's, what am I eating? What am I drinking? Have I drank enough? Have I yet enough of this? Do I need to do any more recovery? So it's an everyday geek, because even on your days off, you're conscious, I suppose, of minding yourself to ensure you're in the best possible place for training the following night or the following week or whatever it is.
John Kiely always speaks really well when he speaks to the media. Very cool and calm and collected in what he says. Is he like that in the dressing room before a game, or is there fire and brimstone in there?
It's not all the time. Listen, any manager that tells you that there's never fire and brimstone, that everything is cool and calm and collected, is total lies. Of course, there's days where you might be playing well or that you might be doing this or doing that. And of course, different players included, you're going to get wound up. You're in a high pressure scenario. So there is days that, you know, managers and players get wound up, I suppose. But for a lot of the time, it was, you know, we had different, I suppose, targets, whatever you want to call them, to meet. And a lot of it was based around that. You know, a lot of it was based on the game plan and figures, and that if you were meeting them or if you weren't meeting them, that's the way the conversation was pointed, really.
Paul Kinnaird has been given huge praise in terms of his training, obviously, first and foremost, but obviously his attention to detail and the systems that he employs. Has it become very complicated playing intercounty hurling?
No, definitely not. Not with Paul Kinnaird, anyway. He keeps it so simple, it's actually incredible. But it's what he does, and what he asks you to do is what makes the difference. It's definitely not become complicated. I know you'd be sitting in the stand, you'd be hearing fellas run, drive along, or stop this tippy-tappy stuff and all this type of stuff. But no, when you're working with someone like Paul Kinnaird, he doesn't make it complicated at all. That's a fact.
So what happens in the training field is easily kind of brought forward towards the games?
Oh, well, everything that happens in the training field is geared towards playing. It's, you know, I believe there are some coaches out there and some managers out there that probably turn up to train and do some fancy training, throw a few cones and do some lovely drills, and people are going home saying, geez, that was a good drill, or, you know, that was a good whatever. But I suppose I'd ask what you got out of it. And every single training and every single drill you did with Limerick had a pointed purpose of bringing that into the match.
Ball retention is a huge part of the modern game. Working the ball through the lines, there's many different ways of actually saying it, but it is an integral part of the game. As you said, that has to be worked on the training field first and foremost.
It does, and it's not easy, because I mean, like, you see Limerick or any other team, they're pinging ball around the place 30 yards and everything is going to hand. That doesn't happen overnight. That takes a lot of training, a lot of training under pressure, and the more you do it under pressure of training, I suppose, you know, the easier it will be in the game time. Not the easier, but you'll just be replicating what you're meeting in training or have faced in training for the previous couple of months. It's a huge part of the game. There's all different ways of doing it. When you win, I suppose, everyone looks at the way you're doing it, but I'm sure there's, you know, many good people out there that know how to enforce that in training these days.
Aside from hurling, Shane, what else would you have a passion for?
Racing, horse racing, huge passion of mine. Very friendly with a lot of jockeys. You know, I could watch racing all day if I was doing nothing, just to see. And that's with the fact that I know a number of jockeys and trainers. You know, you'd have a keen interest in looking, see how they're getting on or how their horses are running. I enjoy being around them. I enjoy going racing. Obviously, that's not the case at the minute. I go to a number of racing meetings every year, and I just enjoy it. I think they're very, very tough people, very, very driven people. And, you know, I love taking after Sunday to different yards or to different meetings. I really enjoy that.
Do you like having a punt?
I do, yeah, at times, but it's not like I suppose the difference between me and, I suppose, unfortunately, a lot of people is that I enjoy racing for what it is. You know, I enjoy the jockeys, I enjoy the crack, I enjoy what they do, of course. You know, if you know, do I have a bit? Yeah, I do, but it's only all for sport and for entertainment, thankfully. And you know, obviously, unfortunately, some people get cut out, but no, for me, it's just the fact that I know a lot of people, I just have a huge interest in it.
You're just back from a cycle, actually. Is that cycle something that's trying to keep you fit in terms of your knee and recovery, or is it something that you actually enjoy?
Well, I wouldn't say I definitely didn't enjoy it tonight anyway. It was, and if I'm being honest, it was my first cycle in probably two months, maybe. It was the first bit of activity I've done in 2 months, believe it or not. I suppose when I got that news from my surgeon, whatever amount of weeks ago it is now, I obviously hit a brick wall, and I just was finding it very difficult and finding it hard even to get motivated to go out. You know, I was coming home some evenings with all the intention of going for a cycle or doing this, and I just ended up lying on the couch because I was just finding it difficult. But in fairness, there's a lad that I know that does a good bit of cycling, and you know, he pulled me out this evening, and to be honest, I feel all the better for it, and obviously something that I'm going to try to get back into the swing of things now again going forward.
You'll have to find something else to keep you fit. Like, that's a challenge in itself.
Well, it is for me, because I would have always struggled with it, like, you know, and the fact that I can't even run makes it a lot harder. You know, I won't say I enjoy running, but even there were some times there I took off around the roads or doing a bit around the Pearsic. Again, not saying that I enjoyed it, but I didn't hate it. Do you know what I mean? And the fact that that's taken away from me now, I do, it is a lot harder. So, listen, there's plenty of ways. There's all them Tabatas that are there now, and within the cycling and doing a bit of work in the gym, which I always hated, by the way. But I've no choice but to do it now. You know, there's plenty of ways, and if I could make an excuse like that if I wanted to, Brian, but there's plenty of ways to keep fit now, and it's really just about getting my head right first and then turning into that.
For sure. JP McManus obviously is a huge part in sport in Limerick, not just obviously with GAA, but he's a huge friend of Limerick hurling and football. He's really looked after you. There was a great rumour going around that he looked after you a lot with a lot of money after you went out of Ireland. You might quell that, will you?
I don't even think that needs to be quelled, Brian. JP is a phenomenal. So sorry, before anyone reads anything else, no, we didn't get, we got absolutely nothing in terms of that, and no reason why we should have had. But you know, he did bring us. You know, he has done a couple of different bits for us. Obviously, it was publicly known that we went over to his hotel in Barbados in Sandy Lane. An incredible experience, you know, unlimited golf. You know, a lot of the boys, and myself included, would play golf. Unfortunately, I was only a couple of weeks after my operation, so I was on crutches for a lot of it over there. But no, an incredible, generous man. And you know, as I said to him recently, to me, I don't particularly. It's none of my business the money that he has or doesn't have. For me, that he was a sponsor of Limerick Hurling as long as I've been involved, I did greatly appreciate that. He did give us platforms to, and provide platforms for us to be able to play it at the highest level. And for that, I will always be forever grateful. Don't particularly, he is who he is, and fair play to him, and huge regard for what he does and what he does for a lot of people around Limerick and indeed the country. But he was a sponsor of Limerick Hurling team, and I was very appreciative of that.
Did you get out to see his house and his stables and stuff?
We did. We did. I was asked to go to Martinstown School one day. Michael Reardon, the secretary of the county board, asked me, would I go out? And I said, Mike, I will. But I said, I have one request. I said, I want to go in to see Martinstown Stud. Because obviously having a big interest in racing, and sure, not a bother. The minute I was done with the school, straight into Martinstown Stud and got the full tour. So I was like a child of Christmas going around there. I was delighted.
We're moving on to probably the big one, Shane, and I'm going to ask you now to pick the best six hurlers you've ever played with. And as always, that's one from each line of the field. So we'll start with your goalkeeper.
Yeah, and I suppose even though I don't really do political answers, I'm going to leave any Limerick player out of this in case anyone gets insulted. So I'll pick six of the best players I played outside of Limerick, if you don't mind. And I think Brendan Cummins would probably top the goalie list. Played with him on a Railway Cup team. Incredible goalie, class. And actually, I always respected Darren Gleeson as well. I thought he was a phenomenal goalie. But I think Brendan was class. I played against him in Fitzhenry, but I didn't play with him, so I'd have to say Brendan. In terms of the full back line, I think JJ Delaney. Played him the All-Star Tour, sure, again, class, marked him a couple of times, doesn't need any introduction. In the half-back line, I would stick into Brick Walsh. Again, played him in the Railway Cup team. I always thought he was probably the cleverest hurler that I played with as well. I thought he was class and a sound bloke as well. Was kind to me, so I'd stick him in there. I think Richie Hogan in the middle of the field. Richie in his prime was different gravy. For a fella, his, you know, obviously wouldn't be the tallest, but class skill, and I'd stick him there in midfield.
He scored an unbelievable goal against you, obviously, when they beat you that famous day in the rain.
2014, yeah, a class goal, and I think because we had him in the racks that day. That was just before half time. We could have done without it. I know Wayne Mack tried to live with him going in there, but Richie still stood and stuck it. It was a tough blow to take just before half time.
Shows the strength in the man for such a small man to be able to ride that tackle, because that was a big hit from Wayne.
It was a big hit, and Wayne would be well known for hitting plenty of fellas. He was plenty strong, and I suppose that's the thing about Richie, that he would have been a good bit smaller than Wayne, but the strength of him and then the skill that he had was unbelievable. I always enjoyed watching him.
You scored a great point that day yourself with one hand.
Yeah, one hand going. Yeah, it was, and I suppose the conditions made it a bit harder as well, but. I think Jackie Tyrrell, or was it Brian Hogan, was after trying to tackle me, and I had no other choice. So And I suppose I wasn't blessed with feet or pace, but I was blessed with a brain. So sometimes that got me out of trouble.
That actually reminds me then of some of the unbelievable goals you've scored, Shane, down through the years. And I just automatically think that two-handed overhand kind of stroke, we'll call it, like a tennis stroke against Kilkenny as well last year. Where did that come out?
Well, listen, as I said, right, like I played in the county hurling for 8 years. I played in Limerick since I was 14, right? I wasn't the quickest. You know, I was a 1990s hurler playing in the 2010 and that era, being honest. And I wouldn't have survived, I suppose, if it wasn't for my brain. I was very lucky that when I was born, God gave me, some might say one brain, which was the hurling brain. I'd say two brain, a brain for living and a brain for hurling. And, you know, that got me out of trouble many times. Because if I didn't have that, I wouldn't have survived that at intercounty level, I think, anyway. So, yeah, I suppose that's just an answer to the question. I was lucky that I had that hurling brain. And listen, where to come out of, I suppose, it was just, as I said, I had no other option because any other strike I'd have been blocked. And but again, it comes back to fine margins. I'm not downplaying it, but if that went another couple of inches to the right, hit the post, went wide, and sure, people would be roaring and shouting, what did he try that for? So that's just, sometimes you get them and sometimes you don't.
But that's, did you ever practice that before? Because I know we all practice the batting the ball into the net when you're in close, yeah, in the goal, maybe 10 yards out, whatever. But you were outside, yeah, the 21 when you took this over. Is it something you practiced?
No, I never know. And I would have done it, I suppose, you know, closer to goal to avoid the hook, you'd have tried it. No, geez, never tried it from that distance. But, you know, whether you were six yards from the goal or 16 yards from the goal, you're going to bat it in with the same power to make sure the goalie doesn't stop it. So I suppose, yeah, the fact that I went in, it did attract attention. But yeah, no, I'd never tried it before.
The other goal that really stands out, and it was a big Twitter sensation there, was your goal against Sloch Neill. And if, correct me if I'm wrong, you were just coming back from injury and you blocked down the goalkeeper and then flicked it, you know, went to rise it with one hand, but saw you were coming under pressure and then flicked it over the cornerback's head and met it on the double. Phenomenal. But that's just quick thinking, I assume. That's kind of what you're telling me.
Correct, yeah. And that comes back to Shane O'Neill being a very, very clever manager. I met Shane for lunch the previous week and we had a discussion about, you know, would I start or would I come on? And, you know, we were just chatting it out, really. Like, none of us had the right answer. And I said, listen, Shane, the only thing I'd say is that if I started and didn't last or had to come off after 20 minutes or half time, you know, it would be a bit of a blow. So at least if I came on, you know, we both thought alike. So that's where that came out of. I probably wouldn't have been able to last the whole game. And I was only back. I probably shouldn't have came back as soon as I did. But yeah, so like that, just like people might have, I would have been, or maybe people wouldn't have seen the work rate side of me down through the years. But I think that day, that came out anyway. And it was badly needed too at the time, whatever. But the goal itself, a goal is badly needed because we were two men down. And yeah, that was. Yeah, no, listen, I probably, you know, people, that for me would probably be ahead of anything else I've done anyway.
Brilliant. To go back to the team we're picking, number one, you've dodged an absolute bullet. You're not picking any Limerick players, so we'll give you a pass on that because you're just recently retired and it is your
podcast.
Give
me another couple of years.
A lot of disappointing listeners out there now, let me tell you. So, to go back who you've picked so far, Brendan Cummins in the goal, fantastic, yep, obviously. JJ Delaney picks himself, Rick Walsh in the halfback line, Richie Hogan. And so we still have two forwards to pick, Shane. Who are you going to pick?
Yeah, TJ Reeves, you know, self-explanatory, he's over in the All-Star Tour. Just incredible, really, what he's done for Kilkenny, especially over the last couple of years when the teams might have been as strong as they were in previous years. Again, talk about a man with a hurling brain. Incredible brain, and again, just love watching him hurl, because he can just do stuff that other, he can do stuff and see stuff that other people can't, and that stands out for me, really, being honest.
And in the full forward line,
the last man, the legend, Tipperary Owen Kelly. Just first of all, an absolute gentleman, I suppose. Really, really nice guy. And again, when I was in the Railway Cup team, I was only a couple of years in the Limerick panel, so, you know, I could have even been thrown to the side. But, you know, he was always very good to me, always made time to say hello to me, first of all. But in terms of hurling, I would argue he was one of the greatest. I think he was, again, probably like me, you know, wouldn't have been blessed with, you know, when I say wouldn't have been blessed, his hurling would have, outweighed his other aspects in terms of physicality. And again, his hurling brain was class. His wrists were unbelievable. And well, I suppose he was you know, the Tipperary supporters loved watching him and responded to him. And you know, even though we're rivals here with Tipperary, I was delighted for him in 2010 when he was captain with Tipperary. I think he's one of the greatest ever.
Brilliant team. Okay, so fantastic, and what a player to finish away, Owen Kelly from Tipperary. Brilliant team. I was just thinking when you were talking about TJ Reid there, and you mentioned that, you know, Kilkenny, and you finally beat them in 2018 in that All Ireland quarter final. The previous year in Nolan Park, you probably left that game behind you. Was that almost a seminal turning point for you under John Kiely, that he believed you were good enough?
I don't know. Maybe we just weren't ready. I don't know. We could have won it, but trying to beat Kilkenny in their own backyard with a young team and a new management is difficult in itself with everything else. We did make a rally in the second half, but probably just weren't good enough, being honest about it. You know, we had another year down the line then, another winter under their belts. And when we did play Kilkenny next time round, I would say we were a lot better prepared. I think John would say that himself. Obviously, he was new into the job. So he would have learned a lot about more players. And that was a massive, massive moment for people in Limerick. Hadn't beaten them since 1973, you know, so down there. And that was the platform then going into the Cork game. That's what set people down here in Limerick alight, was, hold on a minute, there might be something special on here. That was a massive win because of who it was and because of how long it was before, how long Limerick hadn't beaten them over the last number of years.
But mentally, more than anything, that probably was, you had to be so well prepared for that, because whatever about being physically prepared and tactically prepared, to actually beat Kilkenny is huge. Because look, you've beaten all the other teams in Munster up and down throughout the years, but Kilkenny being, you know, the monster that they are and have beaten everyone over the last number of years, mentally you must have been really strong or in a really good place going into that game.
Yeah, well, I suppose one thing we would have said as a team in 2018 was that this team is different. So while no other team had beaten Kilkenny over the last long number of years, that had nothing got to do with us. You know, so whatever anything has happened, it was irrelevant. You know, this was our team, a different Kilkenny team. The past is, you can look into that if you want, but it was meaningless. And we tried to be different to everybody else. But I suppose when you did beat him then, obviously the monkey was off the back then going forward, even though in our eyes, or our minds, the previous history was null and void.
Before you go, we have a quick fire round. Who is the best player in the game currently?
Oh, the best, probably Patrick Horgan. He's really taking his game to a new level, scoring some incredible scores. Patrick Horgan for me.
Oh, fantastic. I thought you might go with Keane Lynch.
No.
Who is the best player you ever played against? And you don't necessarily have to have marked him.
The best player, I'd probably say Tommy Walsh. Played against him in a charity game, the Hurling for Cancer that David Russell and Jim Bulger organised. And Brian Cody was manager of my team, actually, and there was eyes inside full forward. No ball was coming in. And he says, go out there on the half forward line and try to get an old ball. It was all harmless stuff, a bit of crack. And Shrive went out, jeez, Tommy, how are you getting on? First puck came down on top of my head, trying, he half went for it, and I got a dunt into the side of the head, and Tommy clawed it up over me and back down the field. Charity game or not, he was still taking it serious. But that aside, yeah, he's definitely the best player I played against.
Is it a hurl or a hurley?
A hurley down here in Limerick, Brian.
Hoops on your hurl or no hoops?
Two hoops, always. One at the top, one at the bottom, and strike the ball in the sweet spot in between.
Love it. What colour grip did you use?
Black. You go back through the years, I only had a blue hurley once. A blue gripped hurley once, because I wasn't organised, and where I get my grips, they had run out of black ones. So blue was the best I could get after that. But all was black and two bits of white tape in the middle.
Excellent. Adidas World Cups or Puma Kings?
Whatever Elvery's had at the time that were on offer and that were cheap, or my boots. I never gave a hoot about any pair of boots, because in my mind they were all going to get destroyed anyway.
Okay. Sweeper or no sweeper?
Oh, no sweeper in the current game. The halfbacks are sit as it is, no sweeper. I just don't think there's a need for it. I mean, the way the game is played nowadays, that your three halfbacks can sit and your half forwards come deep, sure, your backs have plenty of cover. Why have a sweeper when your backs have plenty of cover and leave yourself a man down up the other end? Unless now you're against a gale force breeze, but rarely I'd have a sweeper anyway.
Have you ever had to play inside with two and a sweeper down the other end?
An inside forward?
Yeah.
An inside forward, me and two now, was never a good idea. That means you had to run quick to the side, and that wasn't the strong point of my game.
O'Neill Slithers or Cummins All-Stars?
Oh, Cummins every day of the week. Best slitter out there. They're just, I can't explain whatever it is. I never liked the O'Neills, being honest. The Cummins are just class. You could hit them a country mile, and there was nothing better than stepping up to free or penalty and seeing a fresh one coming your way.
Brilliant. And last but not least, Shane, Crow Park or Turles?
Crow Park, whether it's at a concert, whether it's driving past it, or whether it's playing in it. Every time we see the place, I get butterflies. And I suppose if there is one consolation that I can take from my unfortunate injuries, that the last game I ever played for Limerick was in Crow Park.
Shane, it's been an absolute pleasure, and I'm sure, I'm speaking on behalf of my listeners, we hope to God you get that knee recovered and you get back playing for the Pearsheik in the short term.
Yeah, fingers crossed, please God. All right, Brian.
Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it. This podcast is sponsored by Golan Bake. And remember, Golan Bake is the home of the jambon, and you can buy their products in any supermarket to bake at home. If you haven't already, can you please subscribe to A Hurler's Life? We're on Twitter at A Hurler's Life, Instagram at A Hurler's Life, or you can email me at ahurlerslife@gmail.com.